From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. It has been more than 6 months since Hong Kong's mass movement began, triggered by a controversial extradition agreement with China. In spite of Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, first putting the bill on hold and then revoking it altogether, protests have continued strong. Documented actions of police brutality have provoked even more anger from Hong Kong's residents. Now, as economists say that the mass uprising has triggered a recession, we examine what lies in Hong Kong's future. My guest is Joy Ming King. He's an activist born and raised in Hong Kong and has been participating in the ongoing protests through organizing and direct action both outside and inside Hong Kong through his work in the Lausanne Collective. And he's currently a student in undergraduate at Wesleyan University. Welcome to the program, Joy Ming.
Thank you so much for having me.
So the latest news that garnered a lot of headlines was what we heard coming out of Hong Kong last week. Protesters marked Halloween by engaging in more protest, which is what many of them have been doing for months and months now. They donned masks and they were engaged in a standoff with police. Can you give me a sense of what took place last Thursday?
Yeah, absolutely. This is the latest example of what I think has been a remarkable creativity coming from Hong Kong protesters throughout this movement since June. Hong Kong protesters are grappling at any possible way to garner more attention and to continue their cause. They've gone internationally to buy out ads in international newspapers. They've called on international organizations and foreign governments to lend their assistance. They've demonstrated immense creativity in all sorts of direct action, wildcat strikes, occupations, blockades. And last Thursday, what we saw was protesters using the opportunity of Halloween to wear all sorts of masks and costumes in violation of the latest law against masks in public assembly that was passed by the government of Carrie Lam, the chief executive, by invoking the emergency ordinance. And so using the occasion of Halloween, Hong Kong protesters demonstrated the absolute absurdity of such a law that bans masks in public by collectively wearing all sorts of different masks, most notably masks of the face of Xi Jinping, the president of China. There were all sorts of different costumes, and it
the
really
Joker
shows.
Joker was quite prevalent. Images of the Joker and also the Guy Fawkes mask.
Yes, absolutely.
Both of which carry a sort of political significance, I think, in terms of a defiance against authority.
Definitely. And you also see, you know, people donning superhero costumes and masks, Marvel superheroes. So I think this is another example, I think, of not only resistance, but collective enjoyment, collective rejuvenation, a way to sustain the movement. It actually reminds me a little bit of an earlier event, I think in July, when protesters gathered around the observatory, or not the observatory, but the Space Museum in a district in Hong Kong called Sim Sha Tsui. And hundreds of protesters gathered to shine laser lights at the building, sort of as a response to the police saying that laser pointers used by protesters were a form of weapon, was a weapon, was an offensive weapon. And so again, it's a response to something that the authorities have said, have tried to repress, but kind of recuperating that as a form of collective resistance and a way of continuing the movement and sustaining itself.
So things that have been banned are then turned against the authorities themselves. People basically start doing them to an even greater extent to defy those bans.
Exactly.
It's pretty remarkable. One of the critiques that you see of these protests, particularly from pro-China voices, is that this is all part of some vast US conspiracy to destabilize Hong Kong and China's relationship with Hong Kong, or destabilize Hong Kong for the benefit of the US against China. There was an article in the New York Times just on Sunday called Hong Kong Protesters Call for US Help. China Sees a Conspiracy. And indeed, there are many images throughout the article showing, you know, people holding up like US flags or images that ask for very legitimate and very direct US help. How do you respond to that? What does that mean?
Yeah, so this is something that many protesters don't have a consensus about. You know, one prominent aspect of this movement is that it's entirely leaderless. So you can ask one protester whether getting the support of the US is a good idea, and you can ask somebody else, and the answers could be very different. And so what I think is true is that the US and the West and the UK certainly have a strategic interest in how the Hong Kong movement unfolds. There's no secret about that. China and the US are superpowers vying for global hegemony. And in this sense, Hong Kong does exist on the geopolitical chessboard and occupies a very important position on that chessboard. There's no denying that fact. However, that's very different than saying that the US or the CIA is directly bankrolling protesters to be out on the streets.
Or USAID.
Fighting. Or USAID funding protesters who are putting their lives on the line, and often the lives of their families on the line, to struggle against one of the most oppressive, repressive regimes in the world. And you look at a lot of the lot of the direct actions, occupations, protests that have flared up in Hong Kong in the past five months now, most of them are not organized by any major organization. A lot of them are self-organized by people on the internet using forums, encrypted chat groups. And in fact, most of the organizing in this movement, whether on the streets or off the streets, whether at home or abroad, have been done through this grassroots way. And so I think it's very disingenuous to suggest that these grassroots motivated strategies of organizing are somehow a top-down conspiracy by the US to destabilize China. Whether there's an incentive by the US to do that, I think, yes, the US has a strategic interest to see China destabilize. But that's very different than saying that these protesters are bought out by the US. I think that these protesters are fighting for something that they believe to be intrinsic to who they are, to be something that they have to fight for with their lives. And nobody can buy that.
I want to talk about the police. The Washington Post had a piece just this week about the language of genocide rearing its head in Hong Kong. And I thought this was extremely harsh, but it describes a scene where riot police dressed in green fatigues advanced down a city street in Hong Kong. When protesters jeered at them, one officer shouted, "Remember, you are not a person. You are not even worthy as an animal. You're not a person. You're a cockroach." And the writer of the article pointed out how this is the language that's sort of reminiscent from Nazi Germany or the Rwandan genocide, that dehumanization of people before massacres. Has it really gone that far?
I mean, in some ways it has, in terms of the rhetoric, in terms of the certainly the intensity of discourse happening in Hong Kong right now. It certainly has, it's reached a boiling point that is very similar to the kinds of social atmosphere of panic and hatred that we see in places like Rwanda and Nazi Germany in the past. However, it's certainly wrong to say that we are experiencing exactly the same kinds of oppression and disaster that unfolded in Rwanda or Nazi Germany. We see similar technologies and techniques being used in addition to the name of cockroaches being employed by police to call protesters. We also see police most recently brand arrested protesters with markers, a series of numbers written on their arms with markers that are very hard to erase.
Wow!
And people have looked at that and made comparisons with techniques employed by the police in Nazi Germany in concentration camps to mark inmates in concentration camps and other facilities. So yes, you see definitely parallels in techniques and parallels in the rhetoric. But I think there is a tendency, not just in Hong Kong, but quite frequently too in the West, to immediately jump to the most extreme comparison of Nazi Germany, of Hitler. And to a certain extent, it helps to impress upon people the dangerousness of such ideology and such techniques. But also we should be careful to make these comparisons with and take them with a grain of salt, and to see the differences and how we can intervene differently than in the past.
Joy Meng, let's talk about the role of the media. Of course, when we're talking about anything involving China, there's the state media at work. And I understand that one of the recent actions by at least some protesters was to vandalize the Chinese state news agency's office. On Monday, Chinese state media issued, you know, essentially what amounted to a threat against protesters condemning their actions and demanding that Hong Kong's authorities crack down even harder on the protesters. What role do you see the Chinese state media as having played in these protests, not just in terms of pressuring Hong Kong's authorities, but also in how it has impacted the impression in mainland China of what's playing out inside Hong Kong?
Yes, I think the state media has a really important role to play in how all of this unfolds. I think you can understand the state media as having essentially three audiences, one being the audience in mainland China, one being the audience in Hong Kong, and the third being the audience internationally, especially the West. And I think the first two audiences are perhaps the most important for the Chinese state media. And they get at those audiences in much the same ways. They play up the nationalist argument that, oh, this is a Western conspiracy, this is a foreign conspiracy to re-implement the kinds of colonialism and imperialism that China suffered at the hands of Western powers in the past, and therefore stirring up nationalist sentiments within mainland China. And this, for the Hong Kong audience, is exactly does exactly what the state media wants, which is to drum up sentiments of Hong Kong nationalism or Hong Kong independence, which plays exactly into the argument of the Chinese state media that this whole movement has been about separation and independence, which it has not. And so it's really interesting how the very same media strategies, the propaganda strategies of the Chinese state media, are received by both the mainland audience and the Hong Kong audience in ways that actually are to the advantage of the Chinese regime. And I think that the propaganda machine definitely is turning all of its resources to the issue of Hong Kong right now and how best to package it, both for its audience within China and outside China.
Now, going back to the U.S. and this sense that the U.S. certainly, you know, benefits from seeing China struggle with its relationship with Hong Kong. The U.S. Congress is considering two major pieces of legislation. One is the Protect Hong Kong Act. The other is the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act. I believe that the first one, the Protect Hong Kong Act, would ban American sales of anti-riot weapons to the Hong Kong police. What is your view of these two bills and whether they would make a difference positively or negatively in Hong Kong?
Yes, I think that whenever we see legislative efforts coming from the United States, especially legislative efforts that involve the United States in foreign affairs, we have to be very careful given what we know about the United States' track record and how it's intervened in foreign countries, always to its own interests, pretty much. And so we can't take these two legislative efforts as purely good or purely bad from the start. We should dive into them and really look at what are the provisions and what are the effects of these provisions. You know, talking about the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act, for instance, one of the provisions is to create a database of protesters who have been involved in this movement. And essentially, the stated purpose of this database is to allow them to enter the U.S. Even if they have a criminal record from protesting.
So it would be for the U.S. to create a database of Hong Kong's protesters.
Yes, that is one of the provisions in this act.
That's
And
wow.
they also are trying to create a database also for Hong Kong and Chinese government officials to freeze their assets and to impose sanctions on them. And so they're using the technology of big data to intervene in a way in the Hong Kong struggle. It seems at first that this is something that Hong Kong protesters would want, but as many critics, both within the Laosan collective, which I am a part of, and outside of our collective, critics have talked about how in the past the US has created databases much like these, initially to support a foreign popular movement. But then, with the change of an administration or with the change of national priorities, very quickly the same data can be used against the people that they were initially intended to serve.
Right, in a
And
future where
so,
US-China relations improved, one can imagine you, the US, turning over this database to China, in exchange for something else.
yes, and
Wow.
in fact, if you look at how Trump has been behaving around Xi Jinping and the praise that he's, been saying about Xi Jinping, it's a very real possibility that this can happen, especially in an election season where Trump is really trying just to find ways to grab on to power whichever way he can. And so we have to be very careful about these legislative efforts and be critical about the history of the US and how the US what kind of role the US should play in foreign movements like the one in Hong Kong.
Is one of the bills better than the other?
I would say that it's very hard to say. I do think that the attempt in the Protect Hong Kong Act to stop the export of tear gas and other riot equipment to Hong Kong is a concrete and strategically sound move. And it would, in many tangible ways, help the people at the front lines in Hong Kong right now. I would be more careful about the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy
Right.
Act and the sweeping powers essentially it gives to the US. And another provision in that act, if I can just bring up,
Yeah.
is that it requires Hong Kong to comply very closely with US sanctions on countries like Iran and North Korea. That seems to be something very different from supposedly the legislative intent of that bill, which is to support democracy and autonomy in Hong Kong.
So it sounds very much like an attempt to rope Hong Kong into being a political pawn of the United States in exchange for supporting the protesters. What about the specific demands of the protesters? One of the demands was, of course, the complete withdrawal of the extradition bill. That is a certain, certainly a very legitimate and concrete victory. But rather than Carrie Lam maybe feeling that that was enough, protests have continued. Do you think that had she completely withdrawn that extradition bill way back 6 months ago when protests first began, that that might have cut things short, but that because she prolonged it and because police acted in such a heavy-handed manner, people who are so upset now that they aren't ready to stop protesting?
Yes, I definitely agree that if she had done that much sooner and de-escalated the situation, this would have been over a lot quicker. But I don't think they wanted to do that. I think that they wanted to show who's boss in this case, in a very literal sense. They were encountering a groundswell of popular dissent and outrage that we haven't seen for many years, at least since the Umbrella Movement. And they saw this as a challenge, but also an opportunity to double down on making sure everybody knows who rules Hong Kong. And it's not the people of Hong Kong, it's not the working class of Hong Kong, it's not the ethnic minorities of Hong Kong, it's the ruling elite of Hong Kong in cahoots with the regime in Beijing. And so they thought they could win this fight easily and quickly, but the people of Hong Kong have showed immense creativity and perseverance in the past 5 months. And that's why I think that the Carrie Lam's government took so long to withdraw this bill. And, in the past 5 months, we've seen unprecedented police brutality, torture, even killings of people in Hong Kong. And we've gone so far down the deep end that I think it's very difficult to come out of it and return to normalcy as it was before.
And so now, what do you think would assuage the protesters? I imagine that some sort of accountability for the pretty severe police brutality that they've experienced is a big part of it.
Yes, the last time I think there was a survey, informally done, of course, but a survey of protesters and of people supportive of the protests, the number one demand that still brings everyone together the most is the demand for accountability in the police, for the acts of police brutality.
And does that police brutality function as a very clear symbol of what is in store, what could be in store for Hong Kong if China were to have its way?
Yes, it certainly does. But there have been critics also of focusing too much on police brutality as the rallying call, as the rallying moment and event for this movement, because we shouldn't, as a movement, be dependent on more and more acts of violence and, in fact, escalating acts of violence in order to sustain ourselves. We need to maintain the capacity for outrage and the capacity for mobilization, even with less and less police brutality, which is something we do want to see. And so while police brutality presents an opportunity to continue building the movement, we also need to find things outside of police brutality. For example, socioeconomic issues that affect the broad masses in Hong Kong, organizing the working class, organizing ethnic minorities, who actually have increasingly had a presence in the movement. And this is something that that is optimistic, I think.
What sort of ethnic minorities do you mean?
I mean South Asian people in particular, who many of whom have been in Hong Kong as long as anyone else, even longer than most Hong Kong people. Many of them have been in Hong Kong for multiple generations.
So these are sort of
speak Cantonese.
I guess, I mean, not immigrant communities, but communities that have their origins from outside Hong Kong. So South Asians living in Hong Kong are now participating in the protests as well.
Yes, very much so. And most recently, I think this was a couple weeks ago, there was an attack on a member of a political party called the League of Social Democrats. He is also one of the organizers of a major pro-democracy organization called the Civil Human Rights Front. And he was brutally assaulted on the streets. And people have said that his attackers turned out to be of South Asian descent. And a lot of protesters at the time were split. Some of them were so enraged by this attack that they wanted to desecrate mosques or attack Chungking Mansions, which is a historic building that is at the center of South Asian community in Hong Kong. But there were also a majority of protesters who were very cautious about this and immediately tried to quell these angry voices and to say that these ethnic minorities have been here as long as anyone else. They're just as much a part of our Hong Kong and our fight for Hong Kong as anyone else. And the very next day, or in the next few days, actually rallied around Chungking Mansions, rallied around South Asian communities, and very actively sought their support and brought them into the movement. And that I find to be a very significant step, especially considering the very racist history of Hong Kong. Hong Kong has a very long history of deep racism, especially against South Asian people. And I am hopeful that this is the beginning of the first step in changing this history and moving it towards in a more emancipatory way.
Well, Joy Ming, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest is Joy Ming King. He's an activist born and raised in Hong Kong, participating in the ongoing protest through organizing and direct action, both outside and inside Hong Kong, through his work in the Laosan Collective. We've been discussing the latest in the Hong Kong protests. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.